Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. Today, we're going to learn what we can do by having five improvements to our body using a simple natural oil. This could take the place of a lot of unnecessary over-the-counter medications, even prescription medications. And this is one of the most important nutrients we can take, and we're not using it. Also, do vegetable oils cause heart disease? We'll give you the latest on that, and how the omega-3 fatty acids can help prevent colds and flus. And then the amazing healing properties of fermented foods. That's a big area that's growing. In fact, I'm trying to encourage people who have the desire and the time and want to do their own home-based business that I absolutely advocate for, especially this time for a lot of people, to do fermented foods or to do medicinal mushrooms. There's a big market for that. You can do something good to help people, earn an income for yourself, and be sustainable. So I'll get into that as well, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'm going to do a commentary from Dr. John Whitehead on what country is this that we're living in that forces you to have your blood withdrawn, or does a cavity search, or even gives you a colonoscopy, and if you resist, they'll arrest you, they'll put you on a stretcher, they'll forcibly do this to you. You won't have any choice in it. So it's happening every day, and we're just not paying attention to it. I believe we should. So I'll deal with that. And then I'm going to address a letter that came to me this morning. Let's see, I'll read it here. This is from Mike. I don't know Mike's last name, but just says Mike, and it says, Gary, two thoughts. Your caller today, this is yesterday, your caller mentioned being a vegan mom and lacking support. Your answer was great on bringing her family over, but I'd like you to mention to her that there are a ton of vegan parents out here, and we can be found through meetups and social media. Though I don't see, I don't use either. I know others that do it successfully. If she's in or near Red Bank, New Jersey, we do a massive vegan potluck. We'd like to invite her to bring her kids. And in your show wrap-up, you mentioned the crashing of the real estate market. I've been living with my family since Sandy, and I've been looking to buy acreage near Central Jersey, but I'm discouraged by the prices. I know you'd send me elsewhere, but I love raising my children around the extended family, and as someone that lives at least part-time in New York City, I imagine you can understand the desire not to be totally stranded with my kids hours from anything but rural charm, not to mention a market to distribute my crops. I'm an aspiring horticulturalist by degree, a waste of money, as you've noted, and practice, and trying to be more self-employed than I am. So I hope you'll address in your comments about the crashing markets that follow. Do you think waiting for a crash and buying acreage afterwards will be a good idea or even possible for lower middle class people like myself with meager savings? Do you see the dollar collapse being intimately linked to the real estate crash or separate? And on an unrelated topic, what do you feel about Bitcoin, coin? Okay, I hope to hear the answers on your show. Well, Mike, you will. Some will be on the program today in this hour, and others will be in a special I'm doing tonight. There are over 6.1 million homes in Florida without power. Now, there's more than one person per home, so you're looking at realistically probably in the neighborhood of anywhere from 10 to 12 million people who are going to go without power. Some of those people for weeks, even a small number, for months. What does it mean and what can we do about it? So I'm going to do a one-hour special today. It'll be tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour on what to do to prepare for any type of disaster, and then where do I see the next major disasters occurring, and how do we protect ourselves, and what will be happening to the real estate market, and what will be happening to those communities that millions of people live near or in right now. I'm going to go into great depth about this. I will not be taking calls. It'll just be an entire hour commentary. But for all of you who care about our future and not being blindsided or not being prepared, it'll be an important hour. You won't want to miss it. Again, 7 p.m., go to prn.fm or progressiveradionetwork.com and listen in. In fact, we're expanding our bandwidth because we expect so many people to come on board. But if you call and want to listen live, like this noon show, you can listen live. But if you need to listen live tonight, let me give you that number, 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046. But let's say you try to get on, and for some reason we have so many people, which does happen, you can't get on, you can download the show on the archives later, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And I'm going to try to touch on everything that people have been asking me, people who are currently in Florida, people who are in Louisiana, people who are in Texas, people who are in California, in Montana, which is having the worst fires in the state's history. You don't see a word about this in the mainstream media. And remember, we're heard all over the world. What about the people in the subcontinent, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Myanmar? You know, they have problems too. 40 million people are homeless for the hurricanes and flooding they had in the monsoons last week. Didn't hear a word about that. You will. And I see this as a game changer. I see us. In fact, I was writing an article this morning I'm going to put up about we're finally at what Marilyn Ferguson, a wonderful writer, by the way, who wrote The Aquarian Conspiracy. It's out of print. But if you can get a copy anywhere, The Aquarian Conspiracy, read it. And also Fritjof Capra's The Turning Point and George Leonard's The Silent Thread, because they all talk about what happens when we're forced to change versus when we want to change, and then when we need to change individually and collectively. But we've always had people changing individually. Now we're going to have to change collectively. And how do we do that when we haven't for the last 50 years? So I'm going to talk about that also at 7 o'clock. And also today we have some audio clips I'll be playing on issues that I think are very important. In fact, I'm going to ask our engineers. I found a clip this morning that I think is really relevant. I sent it over. It's only a minute and a half long, but it's very, very telling. It's a medical doctor. She's a board-certified psychiatrist who lost her child after vaccines. And she didn't know why this happened. And like millions of parents who have a child that's damaged by vaccines, they can't understand it. And then she began to do her homework. And then she found the truth. It's a very short clip. I want you to hear what she has to say about her journey of learning. And what if she had done that journey before vaccinating? When are we going to get this? Well, we're getting to that critical point where so many people have been damaged. We're talking about millions of damaged children and adults, that we're at that turning point where we're going to collectively shift our conscience and not be uneducated on the topic. Now, for those of you who would like to improve your brain function, and I believe most of you certainly do, there's a lot of things you can do But one thing is coconut oil. Now, we're talking about organic coconut oil. Why? This is from Natural News, Jonathan Benson. Quote, "For thousands of years, the human race has benefited significantly from the consumption of fresh coconuts and many of their derivatives. And coconut water and coconut flesh and coconut oil all possess unique nutritional profiles that make them superior healing foods. And coconut oil, in particular, has gained considerable attention in recent years due to its amazing ability to promote fat loss, boost energy levels, protect against disease, and even cure debilitating brain conditions." And then it goes into the particular ones. Now, here's what we now know, and there's good science behind this, by the way. In fact, when I was walking up the street out of Lincoln Center just two nights ago, a fella stopped me and reminded me that years ago, we're talking about, he said 1991, he was a patient at the Tri-State Healing Center. That was a public service project I did to help about, I'm guessing, 5,000 patients all told with natural and alternative approaches to their disease with a whole team of physicians and nurses and others. But I created all the protocols, and the protocols for everyone, I mean everyone, AIDS, breast cancer, dementia, all contain coconut oil. And this is before coconut oil was even being discussed or used anywhere. And also, I blended the coconut oil with bitter melon. Now, 99.9% of the American population have never used bitter melon. And also, there was a person from Jamaica who I knew, and his family grew soursop and cherimoya and would send them up. And I didn't have a lot of them, but when I'd get them, we would blend in the entire soursop. And soursop is known to have one of the most powerful anti-cancer properties in all of nature. Now, I don't recommend soursop for everyone every day, no. And it's not just the soursop, it's also the leaves. But when you blend soursop with bitter melon and use coconut oil, you have one really powerful antiviral drink. Hepatitis, herpes, all the herpes, of which there are over 60, and liver rejuvenation, helping people who've got parasites, all these conditions, thrush, candida, really works great. So, and he reminded me of how he's alive and well today. He had full-blown AIDS, and his partner had, both of them were taking AZT, and they were getting sicker. And their health support group was advocating only the drugs approach and said, don't take all this other stuff. There's no proof it works. And stick with what, you know, the community is using, and that was these antiretrovirals. But everyone in their support group was getting sick and dying. Everyone. And when his partner died, that's when he said he had had enough, and that's when he went cold turkey through all of his meds in the toilet, started an alternative approach, a real alternative approach, and he said that within 2 years he was completely disease-free and became an advocate to go back into the community and try to share his experience and was shut out. He said, Gary, will you ever do a program or write an article on the damage done within the gay community by those who support only the pharmaceutical approach versus those who quietly have supported a more natural approach? And I thought, okay, that's something I'll think about doing, because there's a whole lot of long-term survivors. We're talking about thousands of long-term survivors who choose a natural, non-toxic approach, and you don't hear their stories anywhere. In fact, many of their advocates have been attacked and vilified because they're not promoting the drugs that the pharmaceutical companies have laid millions, hundreds of millions of dollars among those that advocate. Anyhow, he was talking about he never will forget how bad the drinks tasted. I said, of course, bitter melon's called bitter melon because it's bitter. And he said, you had us taking it every hour that we'd be sitting there. They'd be sitting for about 4 hours getting their IV drips. He said the nurse would bring over these little cups. And he said, I just hold my breath and drink it. It was so bad. That's probably the ginger juice, the garlic juice, the onion juice. But he said it worked. He said it reversed my disease. Good. So coconut, what's it do? It's a saturated fat, but a good, healthy saturated fat for brain function. Quote, as it turns out, these same saturated fats are also necessary for proper brain function. Contrary to popular belief, saturated fats from coconut and other sources are not unhealthy, but are in fact needed by the body to prevent and treat neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And Dr. Mary Newport, a pediatrician, knows firsthand how important saturated fats are for the healthy brain function, having published a study documenting her successes in treating her husband's brain degeneration with coconut oil. Quote, our cells can use ketone bodies as an alternative fuel when glucose is not available. And this is what Dr. Newport says. And she says brain cells, specifically neurons, are very limited, more limited than other cells, and what kinds of fuel they can use to function and stay alive. Normally, they require glucose or sugar, but they can also use ketone bodies. It is urgent that funding become available to move forward for the sake of millions who currently suffer. Okay. Also protects us if you have heart disease and if you have high cholesterol. It's also rich in antioxidants and protects against cancer. In fact, a study just cited here in the journal Food Chemistry found that regular consumption of virgin coconut oil can significantly increase the activity of antioxidant enzymes. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Jesse. For those of you who attended our dance party, we had a ball, by the way. Everyone, all ages, all backgrounds, they came, they danced, they socialized, had a great time. And someone was taking a lot of photographs, and they sent us a bunch, and so we posted them. So we have, and they started coming from like 7, 6:30, even though it wasn't open until 7. And then those tend to be older people that would come and then stay for a while and listen to music. And when I got a call from our DJ, and he said, there are people already here, place is packed. I said, go ahead and play the music, even if we're not supposed to, you know, because they'll be leaving early. And they did. But all night long, people were coming. We put photographs up so you can see hundreds of different people having a great time. And next year, I'll do another one. Now, I just also want to mention that there was a study that I had alluded to at the beginning. And this is from Akita University, and they're talking about how the omega-3 fatty acids, this was published in the journal Cell, these Japanese researchers found that how the omega-3 fatty acids can impact influenza virus, and it does so, and builds up your immune system in the process. So if you want to have a stronger immune system and natural antiviral quality of your diet, make sure you're taking the omega-3 fatty acids each day. I would say 1,000 to 1,500 milligrams twice a day. And then I mentioned, do vegetable oils cause heart disease? This is a study that showed that a lot of the processed safflower oil and peanut oil and canola oil, they do cause problems. And that's because that they are pro-inflammatory. The omega-6 fatty acids are inflammatory. And what you want is you want more of the omega-3s. The omega-3s are what I just mentioned. So that's important. So here's the rule on these oils. So it can be a little confusing. The best oils to take daily would be flaxseed oil, hemp oil. You could take, if you eat fish, cod liver oil. In fact, if you have arthritis, if you have bursitis, if you have fibromyalgia, 2 tablespoons of emulsified cod liver oil on an empty stomach in the morning is the best thing for you. Now, that, if you take the fish. But if you don't, if you're like myself, a vegan, then you can get it from walnut oil, avocados, almond oil. These are all outstanding sources. And, of course, the monounsaturated olive oil is terrific. To cook with, you don't want to cook with any of these oils. The oil you want to cook with at low temperature would be coconut oil, macadamia oil, and mustard seed oil. Those have very high heat resistance, meaning you can cook things without it altering the chemistry of the oil. Now, you can also have some omega-6 fatty acids, which are perfectly fine, providing they have not been refined. So if you look at an unrefined oil, it's dark. There's little specks of debris. Those are the natural antioxidants. And those are completely healthy, providing that you have them in balance. And right now we're eating about 6 to 1, meaning 6 times the bad oils as we are the good oils. So reverse that, meaning if you're going to have an oil on a salad, have an olive oil, all right? Or have in your smoothie in the morning, have the coconut oil or the flaxseed oil. You can always season it to your taste. In fact, starting next week, unless we can do it this week, I've made some seasonings for you. These are all gluten-free vegan seasonings that give you a wide variety of taste, because not everyone's going to be able to change the meal they eat every night. So if you're used to eating rice, and you're going to eat rice or beans every night, different ones possibly, but you want it to taste different, then the seasoning you use on it will suddenly change the entire effect of the meal. I'll give you an example. By having a raspberry tangerine vinaigrette, where you take some extra virgin olive oil, and you take some coconut oil, and you add in fresh raspberries, a little lemon juice, a little apple cider vinegar, and with water, and then you blend that quickly for 10 seconds, and then you put that into a squeezy bottle, all right, or a spritzer, and you put it in a fridge, and it's going to be good for at least a week or two. So then now you have a salad, and you spray that on the salad, and that changes the whole taste of the salad. But let's say you want to have brown rice, and you want a teriyaki flavor, you want a Southeast Asian flavor, you want a different flavor. There are different spices and herbs you can use then to give you either something very savory or something very exotic, like coriander and cardamom with anise and cumin, very exotic. And so then you put these into just little dispensers. So you don't have to make a new dish. You can use the same dish, like a brown rice, but it's what you add to it by putting a little sauce on it. And so I made up about 7 different original recipes for you, and I'm going to ask my webmaster when he comes in today, can he post those later today? And again, they're there. You use them, download them. They're free. There's a public service just to broaden our taste. And then over the next month, as I'm away at our retreat, I'm going to be making up the recipes for my new cookbook, which will be out in the spring. And I'll be perfecting about 120 new recipes. And as each recipe is perfected, I'll be selecting the best recipe for a chocolate dish and the best recipe for an entree, and I'll post it. So just keep your eye on the personal Facebook of Gary Nall or PRN.FM's Facebook and or our website, and you'll see these recipes. And I'll even take photographs of how they should be plated, because the what makes a dish really special, in my opinion, is did you create it as if it were an art piece? You know, something really unique creatively, not just plop down a bunch of beans and rice on a plate. That's boring. But really decorate it. So I'm going to show you how to plate dishes. Do any of you remember eating at Gary's place? Either the Fertile Earth up on 108th and Broadway, which was the first gourmet vegan restaurant in America. We were packed every night. The Berrigan brothers, if you were into the anti-war movement, you ate up there. Because the people from Columbia would come down. And then over on Columbus. Well, what people would say is, gee whiz, this looks too good to eat. They come and take their camera and take pictures of it, because everything in the basement was plated. I'd be down there plating dishes and make them look very artistic. And I think that's what's missing, has been missing in much of the natural movement. You think as long as it's healthy, that's enough. Why not make it really beautiful at the same time? Who says you can't have something, just even making, even doing something really simple by taking a cup and mixing your grains in a cup, and then layering that, and then you layer it so when you take off the final compound of the cup, it looks like a wonderful parfait. But it's interesting. And you put a sprig of, an herb at the top. Suddenly someone goes, wow, that's not, what is that? Is that just some rice and beans? Yes, just rice and beans. But it's how you decorate it. So I'm going to be doing more of that and sharing those with you. And because I'm going to be in my high-level creative stage down there, I'm going to be doing this every day. And so I'm going to take the photograph, set the plate, describe how you do it, and then everybody should be able to do that if you're into making food exciting, interesting for yourself, for your family, for your friends. We just got to do a lot more of food and make it interesting. And by the way, finally on fermenting foods, I'm happy to say that a medical doctor, board-certified physician, is now leaving the field 80% of medicine and going into being into the back-to-the-land movement. And he's starting with fermented foods. And it's taking him about a year to learn all about fermentation and how you do it and trial and error. And now he's got it down. And I'm suggesting how to do it at a farmer's market. And I'm giving them the A to Z, what to do if you want to do this, what kind of sign you put, and how do you make your product different, and how do you price it, and how do you know how much profit you're making. Everything you need to know, he's now doing it. So I'm going to take some pictures of him, and because he's starting to do it at a major farmer's market in the next month, and then I'll tell his story. And I'll have him on there, and he'll tell a story. My hope is that more of you will be motivated to start doing this from your homes and earn extra income and get good quality foods. Well, fermented foods are really good food to have. Probably the most commonly used in America right now is kimchi, K-I-M-C-H-I. It's a very strong probiotic strain isolated from fermented cabbage preparation. It's kimchi. It's a very strong lactobacillus brevis, and it helps actually degrade toxic pesticides. So if you've had pesticide exposure, taking kimchi can help detoxify the body. If you've had mold exposures, if you've had bacterial exposures, it's great. Do I like the taste? I can't stand the taste of kimchi. I make my own fermented foods. But much more desirable in taste would be miso, M-I-S-O. And miso is a fermented soy, and it reduces the risk of breast cancer by up to 54%, prostate cancer, and really helps your immune system. And everyone who has cancer, I have them on miso. But you don't have to use soy. You can use barley, chickpea, which is a very mild, kind of light yellow, and very sweet. It does not be bitter, and it has lower sodium content. And then you can also have, by the way, colorectal cancer really responds well to fermentation in natto. Now, natto is probably I would rather eat a shoe that a dog found in a landmine than eat natto. It's good for you, but man, it's bad. It's vile. And it's a fermented soybean, but it suppresses plaque buildup. It cleans your arteries. It helps regain nerve regeneration. In fact, one of the people who was helped overcome multiple sclerosis did so by having it twice a day. It was just one of the many things he used, but he kept complaining about how bad it is. I said, just hold your nose and take it down. It's good for you. So fermented foods are really good, and sauerkraut is probably the easiest and most compatible because you can just mix it into dishes. You can heat it up and mix it into heat it and dice it, and then mix it into brown rice or beans. It's delicious that way. Or you can put it cold into a salad. But all these are doing one thing. They're building good probiotics, the good bacteria, the biome, in your intestine. That turns on the immune system. That helps your body heal. That encourages healthy relationship between your intestine and your brain. Remember, you have neurons both in your skull and in your intestine. You have hundreds of billions of these probiotics work on your behalf and helping your cells. Healthier gut, healthier brain, healthier body. So that brings us up to date on all this. Now, I want to share a little piece that I think is important, because people will say to me, well, Gary, with all this good information that's based upon real science, independent science, why is it more people haven't picked it up and used it and changed? And for a long time, I didn't have the answer that I felt would make sense. But here's the answer I'm going to share with you today. And it's just one answer, by the way. It's because most people, including professional people, are also equally susceptible to everyone else to propaganda. If you see the same ads and the same spokespersons, and you hear the same message over and over and over again for years, and especially during your younger years, you're very susceptible to accepting that as a truth. And then that becomes a part of your cognition. And to change or challenge your cognition is very difficult. Not impossible, but difficult. So if someone says to you, what kind of food you're going to have? Well, we're going to go have a pizza. No one's going to stop and say, what actually you're taking into your body? You're taking in a burnt crust that's pure carbohydrate that's going to break down as pure sugar, but the chemicals in that crust, the acrylamides, are known to be carcinogens, and they speed up the aging of the cell. They shorten your telomeres. They literally, for every pizza slice you eat, you're shortening your lifespan. The cheese is not it's not a healthy cheese. It's not like what you're getting if you go into the Switzerland and into the Alpines and have yourself some fresh cheese. This is highly processed, frequently from cows that have been genetically engineered. And that means it is a frankenfood. Also, it's highly allergenic. Humans shouldn't be eating cheese because we don't need it. Humans shouldn't be having any milk. We don't need it. In fact, I just finished weaning a new little adorably fun and joyful and curious Jenny. A Jenny is a female donkey. And it was a rescue. The mother was, and no one said that she was pregnant. Well, she's a mega, and a lot of people don't want a mega donkey because they're big. They're as big as a horse. But they're very good because they can protect your property, protect animals, protect cats, dogs, anything you've got, they'll protect it. But they can also be very gentle, unless they've been abused, in which case they're very aggressive and they can kick you. And you don't want a 500-pound donkey kicking you. But lo and behold, one day here's this little gorgeous creature and that had been born. And first thing you do is you have to go over there and you have to feel the udder. Is it solid? Not good. Is it pliable and soft? Good. You milk it. You squeeze the teats down. And are they giving you colostrum? What color is it? How much is it? And because there'll be natural dripping, but then it stops. The trouble is, if you don't make sure that the little heifer or colt or whatever animal it is getting the actual colostrum, it could live about 2 to 3 days. It's going to die of malnutrition. It happens all the time. It turns out this one was not milking. It was dry. And so that means you got to feed it. And you got to feed it like 5 times a day. And it builds up to where they're getting about 15 pints a day of this until they can be weaned off. And in the process, you have to know how to feed them. You have to know how to stand over them and stroke their neck gently. And you put the bottle in. And then you have to constantly pet its head. And so that it bonds with you as well as not rejecting you. Because if it rejected you, it could starve to death. So knowing animal husbandry, especially rescuing animals, and animals have been damaged and you got to get them back to health and find them a loving home or put them onto a sanctuary, it's a catch and go. But if you want to see something adorable, these little creatures, all they're filled with is love and curiosity. And after about 3 weeks, you watch them in the daytime, because you don't want them trying to milk with the mother, because then they'll reject the bottle, in which case they'll starve to death. But the mother and daughter are over the stalls, and the mother is kissing the little daughter all day long. But then when you go in, it's kissing you. And you sit there, and it'll come up and try to get up on your lap because it thinks it's a dog, and it loves everything. So if you live in the country and you ever want to want one of nature's most perfect companion gifts, if you've got a farm, it's a Jenny. Not a Jack, a Jenny, a female. Anyhow, just a little side thought there. So, in any case, the mainstream media teaches you need milk, you need meat, you need the pizza, you need the hamburger, you need the barbecue ribs. Now that cooking shows you people cooking the meat and slaughtering the meat. And how you can make it taste different. And all the shows then become popular. Like the man versus food. It shows a man literally eating 6 pounds of food at a time. I mean, it could be 6 pounds of ice cream I saw him eat. It could be 6 pounds of salami. But the human body cannot possibly process that. That man's lucky to be alive. So what it's doing is encouraging everyone else to eat far more of a bad food that they shouldn't have to begin with, in which case then they're putting their lives at risk. So now, you come along and you start to suggest that maybe a vegan way is better. Okay, and people, they can hear what you say. They're not registering it because there's been so much propaganda. And everywhere they look, they're not seeing a vegan. They're seeing a meat advocate, a fast food advocate, a soft drink advocate. They're not seeing you. Well, to answer part of Mike's question is, Mike, I think it's a great idea to have anyone in the audience who wants to experience first just being a vegan to realize that there are hundreds of vegan associations around the country. It has nothing to do with politics. You keep the politics out, you just focus upon, at this stage, getting together to have a support system where you can learn about food and farming. Because more often than not, the educated vegan is also educated about GMOs and organic versus commercial farming and a return to the land and farmers' markets and food co-ops and the healthy part of a health food store and all the other ways that you can broaden. Once you have one piece of a puzzle, your interest in changing your diet, now you get another piece. And then you meet people that overcame heart disease and cancer and diabetes using a vegan, healthy plant-based diet. Because there are also people who have unhealthy plant-based diets. The very fact someone says they're vegan or vegetarian doesn't mean that they're healthy. That's why you have to have get-togethers and get the best literature, watch the best documentaries or good documentaries, Forks Over Knives, very good documentary. And Cowpocracy, very good. I recommend all these documentaries, at least all I've seen. I commend the producers, the writers. They've done a good job. It's a good service to all of us. And then you get together, and then you have a potluck. You know, everybody brings something, and then you share it. And then people have a chance to talk about what they made and share the recipes. I remember it was 3 years ago. I had the premiere of one of my films, Downtown, and afterwards, some people came and said, we're putting together a vegan potluck dinner. Would you come over? I said, sure. So I went over to see what it was all about, and there must have been 150 people, 200 people. The place was filled with interesting people, with interesting ideas, and all of them had a story about how becoming a vegan changed their life. And there were children there also. So my suggestion is, take your children, if you have children who are finicky eaters, don't want to change, take them to let them see that there are other kids out there who are vegan, who are healthy and happy and don't have ADHD and don't have all these other conditions that are so common, don't have runny nose, bedwetting, allergies, inner ear infection, and asthma, don't have autoimmune conditions because they're really healthy. And then from that vegan, you start getting into the raw food versus the cooked food, how much. Then you get into those who are juicing, those who are sprouting, those who are using herbs. So you open a door to which you have 1,000 other doors you can open. And just go up and Google. Now, what I'm going to do to help you all is I'm asking our one of our webmasters, Tanya, today to start a resource page. I don't know how long it'll take her to do it, and we will post it on PRN's page, and I'm asking Jesse to do this. We'll list all the different vegan places in the United States, all the different organizations, all the different meetup places, so you'll have a place you can contact people in your area and then gain some support, because finding the right support system in life is crucial to going forward in your own life and helping support your position if others in your family may find what you're doing too odd or eccentric or threatening. Okay? Here's the other reason that you don't have a greater health conscious movement in America, though it's happening. It's beginning. In fact, I just wrote a letter this morning to my agent and said that we are right at the cusp. We're right at the forward movement to the biggest health shift in American history. And it's going to happen in the next year to two. Next 12, 24 months, we'll have the biggest shift in health awareness in American history. We're going to play you a piece. The U.S. drug companies, they also control what we are taught. They control the ads. They control the networks. They control the legislators. They control the health magazines, the medical magazines. They control a lot of front groups, AstroTurf groups that have a healthy name but are actually promoting disease. Listen to this.
With the exception of CBS, every major media outlet in the United States shares at least one board member with at least one pharmaceutical company. Let me put that into perspective. These board members wake up, they go to a meeting at Merck or Pfizer, then they have their driver take them over to a meeting with NBC to decide what kind of programming that network is going to air. And for those board members who aren't pulling double duty with a media conglomerate and a big drug company, they still understand that they can't be mean to Big Pharma because Big Pharma pays their bills. Drug companies spend about $5 billion a year on advertising with these media outlets. So when you have a case against Pfizer or Merck or Eli Lilly or any of the other major pharmaceutical companies, do you think those board members are going to let you get on the air and tell a story that's bad about what they do? Or are you naive enough to believe that they really don't interfere with the day-to-day operation? It can take anywhere from 3 days to a full week before the media reports on a drug or a medical device recall, if they report on it at all. In the case of Invokana, for example, it took 32 days before media outlets reported about an FDA warning about the product creating too much acid in the bloodstream. The FDA began warning about the dangers of Cook IVC filters as early as 2010, and then it took 5 years before the media started paying any attention to that. And it's worth pointing out that these instances, it's only been through non-corporate, independent media outlets that these stories are told at all. You can replace IVC or Invokana with any of the other drug or any product, and the story's always going to be the same, whether it's Strike or hip implants or C8 killing somebody or Vioxx killing somebody or Roundup killing, causing cancer, Xarelto or E-Sure, talcum powder. The corporate media doesn't care about these stories because they either share board members with these companies or because they want those companies to keep throwing huge advertising dollars their way. These gigantic media corporations aren't going to do a thing to threaten their relationship with their biggest advertisers. And one way or another, they're always going to express the ideological views of their owners, their corporate owners. Fortunately, an increasing number of Americans are starting to wake up and realize that the mainstream media should not be trusted. In recent years, we've seen the alternative media experience rapid growth. Mainstream media has been losing credibility at a staggering rate, and Americans are starting to look elsewhere for the truth about what's really going on. Do you think that anyone in mainstream corporate news would actually tell you that we're facing a horrific derivative bubble that could destroy the entire United States, for example? Are they going to tell that story, or are they going to be more concerned about what their Wall Street pals are saying? Good example. Do you think anybody in mainstream or corporate media would actually tell you the truth about the voracious greed of Goldman Sachs? Do you think they want to talk about the fact that DuPont's deadly toxins can be found in the bloodstream of almost every living creature on Earth because DuPont pays their bills? Wall Street pays their bills just like the drug company. The corporate media can't handle complex stories anymore. They don't understand the link between crony capitalism and the revolving door between the FDA and the drug industry. So they wouldn't even talk about that if they were allowed to. They aren't capable of connecting to the dots that we have to connect in trials every day, for example. They simply don't understand it, or they don't want to take the time to understand it because it's not big dollars for them. But the media is only one side of the story here. Big Pharma knows that if they want to continue manipulating the public, we have to start with our elected officials in Washington, D.C. According to Open Secrets, Big Pharma spent more than $58 million on politicians in 2016, the most amount they've ever spent on direct contributions in the last quarter century. Why? Because they, big drug companies, want politicians to do what they order them to do. And when it comes to lobbying, few industries spend more than Big Pharma. Last year, the industry spent a staggering $244 million to influence our elected leaders in Washington, D.C. And it looks like things are about to get much, much worse. You see, Big Pharma understands that the ridiculous price markups, their price gouging, that it draws negative attention from the American public. And no matter how much they spend on advertising or buying our politicians, which they do every single day, they can't keep public anger down. So according to a new report by ProPublica, drug companies are offering huge money to scientists, people I call biostitutes, their professors or their academic, willing to author studies showing that these drug markups, this price gouging is necessary and that it's good for Americans. That's really the story that they're going to get these biostitutes to tell all over the country. Big Pharma has managed to manipulate our media, they've manipulated our politicians, and now they want to corrupt the scientific community. But what we're going to see after we see this story created that price gouging is just fine, we're going to see the stories emerge in universities, and then corporate media is going to take those stories and they're going to plaster it all over the air, trying to convince you that 6,000%, 10,000%, 15,000% markup for a drug is just okay with the American public. And that's going to be what they do in the next 6 months.
Okay, and that was Ring of Fire. And the takeaway message there is something I mentioned yesterday. In fact, I'm going to spend the last few minutes of our program today, for those of you who could not get through, to give a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and continue that addressing that. You do not see the Surgeon General. You do not see the head of the FDA, CDC, the National Institutes of Health, National Cancer Institute, none of the official agencies supposedly there to protect us from disease, advocating on behalf of children's health, except to get a vaccine, the very thing that they shouldn't be doing. And behind that is the Big Pharma he was just talking about. And no one is going to go up against Big Pharma. No one's going up against McDonald's. No one's going up against any of these fast food franchises. No one's going to, because they control where the money goes. And you just got an idea how much money, $245 million just last year. That's an enormous amount of influence. Then they control through the media. So when you have celebrities asking you to do something, buy something, you're more likely to be impacted by that. So we'll take your calls in a moment. So I'm asking you this. How can we protect American children and children around the world from just being another profit stream? How can we hold those people accountable in the media, in corporate America, in our legislators for all being a part of that collective commodification group? So it's important. There are parents, conscientious school teachers. There are nutritionists, there are physicians who are doing the right thing. And their children should be very grateful, even if not aware, how much sacrifice that parent is making. Because today, to be interested in health, you have to, in effect, make a risk to do that. Because now you're an advocate. And in America right now, we're not happy with advocates. Let's say hello to Laura about helping kids. Hi, Laura. Your turn.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the comment about what we can do to help the kids through what's going on in the systems combined. And because of what I understand about fluoride, and it's in the water system, and how if fluoride is in our bodies, our thyroid is allowing the fluoride to go in instead of iodine, which will, you know, benefit the thyroid. So I think that it starts with the water systems on the whole to get the fluoride out of the water. But I believe that's only going to happen if more parents, especially, and future parents, understand the dangers and the repercussions of the fluoride, in addition to commercial bread bakers using bromated flours. Apparently, from what I'm understanding, the bromates and the fluorides, that's what the body will put in the thyroid instead of iodine. So if you're circulating that through the bodies, we're jeopardizing ourselves right there. But, you know, in addition to other things going on, I think that would be a good start. Get the fluoride out of the water systems.
Laura, have you read The Fluoride Fiasco?
I have not.
Okay. It's the most definitive article scientifically referenced ever written on fluoride. I started it 40 years ago. I keep updating it every 6 months. It's been used by hundreds of thousands of people in a lot of communities around the world, no longer fluoridate, because they're able to take that document into a local community and organize based upon the science it's presenting to stop the fluoridation. And it goes a lot beyond that. Fluoride in cancer, fluoride in modeling of teeth, fluoride in osteoporosis, fluoride in immune dysregulation. In fact, one of the most important people talking about the dangers of fluoride was Dr. Dean Burke, one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute, as well as a Dr. John Yamianis. I interviewed them both on many occasions, and they said as many as 15 to 20,000 preventable deaths a year from cancer are due to fluoride. And yet people who have talked about the dangers of fluoride have been mocked and ridiculed, and yet we actually have the science on our side. And so it's good to cite the actual science and show all the different things that it does wrong and where it actually came from and why we end up fluoridating our water, which we don't need to do in the first place, and how a lot of what we're told about fluoride is simply misinformation. So look up The Fluoride Fiasco. It's under my articles, and I've got over 755 articles that I've written, and use that. And I think it's a good idea to take one thing, like, for example, where does our water come from? When it comes out of the tap, where did it get to before it was in the tap? Is it from an aquifer? Is it from a river? What? How do they purify it? What's left in it? Oh, you mean there are medicines left in it? You can have chemotherapy. You can have psychiatric meds. You can have statin drugs in the water you're drinking out of the tap. Are there viruses in there? Are there parasites? So if you take any given topic and you really develop it in depth and you have children watch this and you educate them, then you're far more likely to help that child. Then you can take something else, like where's our food come from? Now, where's this head of lettuce come from? And just take it back to show the head of lettuce, was it grown where someone was paid a living wage and treated decently and ethically? Or did they use labor that they exploited and exposed to pesticides? Again, take one topic at a time and develop a full volume of information, pamphlets, videos, audios, articles, and that's the way I would approach it. But you're absolutely right on the spot there, Laura. Thank you for calling in. We can help our kids by educating them, but we have to educate ourselves as adults to help those children. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening in. Look forward to sharing more. And remember, tonight, 7 o'clock, a whole hour devoted to understanding the environment, your place in it, and the future. Have a nice day, everyone.
Ask me how I know, and I'll tell you something.